This is the new Weight Watchers, built for real life and real results, no matter what mode you're in. Maddie went all in for her big day and lost 33 pounds. Emily lost 85 pounds and hit her goal while still living her life.
Weight Watchers gave me the tools and I feel amazing.
Join the millions of members and lose weight with the number one doctor-recommended weight loss program.
I'm able to live my life and still hit my goals.
Lose more at WeightWatchers.com.
Hi, I'm Kyrie Irving, and you're listening to the Mavs Step Back Podcast.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome in to another episode of the Mavs Step Back Podcast. I'm your host, Dalton Trigg. I'm rejoined by my co-host, Drew Johnson. You can find us on X at Dalton_Trigg and at CoachDrew33. DJ, before we get started talking about Mavs, I just wanted to bring this up. It's very random, but, you know, it's been on my mind because, you know, last weekend I went to a T-Pain concert and it was outstanding. It was the guys still got it, but there is a T-Pain revival of sorts going on in this country, and I am very much here for it. That dude is awesome. He has always been awesome, and he will always be awesome, and I just... I think the T-Pain revival is something that we all needed. Well, I say we, but I mean, I don't know if you're as big of a fan of him as I am, but I am like, you know, I can't believe that this guy is still going as hard as he is. He even has a new song out there called Club Husband, I think. It's very catchy. Like, my wife and I were listening to that the other day. I was like, this dude, he has still got it. So,
did he play all the hits? Like, did he play Buy You a Drink and Bartender?
Yeah, it was, he only was up there for like an hour, but it was just like, you know, little, you know, 30 second, maybe 1 minute clips of each song, old stuff, newer stuff, you know, songs that he was featured in that weren't technically his song, songs that weren't his at all that he just decided he wanted to. It was very, very cool, you know, very random that he decided to come to Brandon, Mississippi. But I was like, shoot, that's like an hour drive for me.
Was it packed?
Oh yeah. Yeah. It was the amphitheater and like there wasn't a seat open. It was crazy. Completely sold out.
Thing about T-Pain though is he's kind of underrated as an actual like rapper. Like have you ever actually like do you remember the song Karaoke?
Yeah. Yeah. Where he was getting after people, you know.
Using auto-tune?
Yeah, so, yeah, saying so. Well, Usher, I think it was, that gave him so much crap about that, which, you know, what's Usher doing these days?
I don't know.
But T-Pain can actually sing. I mean, the auto-tune stuff enhanced it, and it made it a cool sound and everything, but the guy can actually sing, and that's what I like about it.
It was his sound. You know, he pretty much coined that. And then Lil Wayne hopped on it, and, you know, no matter what Wayne does, it's cool. But T-Pain is the one who pioneered that, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Auto-Tune had been out, but he took it and ran with it. And, I mean, if you think Auto-Tune, you think T-Pain. But wanted to get that out there. You know, in a time where there's so much, like, negativity being thrown around and everything, I was just thinking to myself a while ago, I was like, T-Pain is back. And then I thought about it, and I was like, you know what? He never left. He's always been here. He's able to withstand everything. And I just love that. And I feel like we're the same way. Like we might be half washed when it comes to math step back, but we're still here and we're persevering. We're still here.
I have a kid now, but we're still here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just, you know, we're still rolling, but, speaking of that, I think this is like the eighth. If I calculated right, we're starting our eighth season of Mavs Step Back, which I think, how long have you been on here with me now? 2-3 years? I don't know.
No, it's been longer than that. It's
probably
been
4 years.
It's been like 4 or 5 years. Yeah.
Yeah. But
it would have been 2021, I think. I think that's right. Yeah. I don't know.
Somewhere about 4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Starting the eighth year of the podcast overall. We kept up with some storylines and things going on throughout the offseason. And we were super excited. You know, Mavs got Cooper Flagg. We liked a lot of things that we saw during the preseason. So came to that first game, the opening night game. You're playing at home against the San Antonio Spurs. You know, things are great. Mavs are going to win the championship. And then by the time we got like through the middle of the third quarter of that game, I was looking up Darren Peterson highlights on YouTube, getting ready for the tank. So, so needless to say, I didn't want to record last night because it was, you know, you have some initial emotions coming up from what you're watching and you want to, you know, kind of settle down and be more rational with your takes later on. So we delayed this pod a little bit, but man, yeah, it was not a good way to start the season. The Spurs absolutely curb stomped the Mavs, 125-92. Victor Wembanyama is, I don't even know what to say, DJ. You've been on record saying that, you know, you believe if he stays healthy, he's going to end up being the greatest of all time. And last night was no better example of that, I think, because in 30 minutes, he only played 30 minutes in that game last night, and he had 40 points on 15 of 21 shooting, 15 rebounds, one assist, one steal, three blocks. But I mean, let's be honest, DJ, he altered probably 20 plus shots, even though he didn't technically get credited with blocks. Because of his length, he's just unbelievable. He's almost 8 feet. Just unbelievable. All that in 30 minutes, he was a plus 31 on the night. Victor Wembanyama completely dominated. And, you know, he hadn't played in, I think it was 8 months, because his season got shut down last year because of some kind of deep vein thrombosis or something like that. I think I said that right, but that's his season got shut down, and that was kind of a health scare for him. And he has come back with a vengeance, and that was absolutely unbelievable to see. So, look, we're going to get into some Mavs stuff, some stuff we like, some stuff we didn't like, Cooper Flagg, Anthony Davis, all that stuff. But we got to start with Wembanyama because he was by far, you know, the eye-opening thing of the night in that game.
Well, what stood out to me most about Wembanyama is his center of gravity and his ability to knock, you know, players that we would perceive to be stronger than him off their center and basically just get whatever he wants at the rim, whenever he wants. Like, here's the thing. You can't single guard him anymore. There's nobody on God's green earth that can single guard Victor Wembanyama. PJ did an okay job just because of his physicality, but once it was free throw line extended, it's over because he just steps around him because he's literally go-go gadget. We've never seen anything like this before. I know, like, whenever he was coming out, my main comparison for him was a guy named Ralph Sampson way back then, and I still think that's an okay comparison, but Ralph could never. I mean, it just – there's – we've never seen anything like this. He's 7'7", first of all. You know, if it's to be believed that Derek Lively is 7'3", I saw, whenever I saw them side by side, and I was talking to my wife about this, and I was like, look at them. Derek Lively is 7'3". How tall do you think Wembanyama is? And we both said about 7'7", yeah, which is just, and the ball skills, the body movement, the footwork, that's another thing. The feet are finally there now. The feet are fine. They've been installed. Okay. Like, we're in our second form now, and things are different. We're stronger. We're faster. We're more skilled. We can get wherever we want on the floor. And your only hope to neutralize him is to double team him every time he gets the ball on the perimeter. It doesn't matter. If you try to double team him free throw line extended, even on the block, it doesn't matter. He's just going to go right over you. You have to double team him the second that he gets a catch on the perimeter, and you simply just cannot allow him to catch anywhere inside the perimeter, or it's curtains. It's over. He can get to the rim whenever he wants. And I've never seen anything like this before in my entire life. But I will say this. I went on record saying whenever the year before he was drafted, I went on record and said that he will change basketball. And where are we?
It's certainly looking like, I mean, dude, if he stays healthy and if he's consistent, I'm not saying he has to do what he did last night every game, but if that's like close to what we're getting every time he plays, he's not just going to win MVP. He's going to win Defensive Player of the Year. You know, he might sweep. he might sweep the awards if he, you know, if this keeps on the way it's going. Because
that thing, dude, he made it look so easy. It looked so. It didn't even look like. To tell you the truth, I mean, yeah, he was locked in, but it didn't even look like he was like hardcore locked in. You know, he looked like if this was just another day at the office. He just came in, got business done, and you know, walked out after 30 minutes. Like, I felt bad
for Lively because, you know, it was the moment I knew, because, you know, that the game was pretty close in the first half until, mm-hmm. you know, the Spurs made a run at the end of that second quarter to go up by 9 at halftime. But like until then, it was back and forth. It was a close game. You know, the Mavs weren't playing good offensively at all. But, you know, defensively, they were doing okay. And you thought, okay, well, this is anybody's game. But the moment that I was like, okay, we are in trouble, was Derek Lively got the ball and thought he was going to do one of those little hook shots. And Wembanyama was like probably 5 feet away from him at the time he went up for the hook. And Wembanyama just like grabbed it out of the air. Like
nothing is safe ever. Just,
he grabbed it and then he went coast to coast. He got the ball. I think he passed the ball. He may have got the ball back. But anyway, it ended up being him versus Lively on the perimeter just after he had blocked Lively and went between the legs twice, stepped back three, nailed it, and Lively fouled him, and he hit the free throw too. And at that point, DJ, I was like, all right. I was like, okay, what are we doing here?
You want to know what my O-S-H-I-T moment was? So I had a couple. The first one that hit me was whenever Cooper Flagg got the ball. It was on a drag. It was like a mid-break drag. He got the ball at the top of the key, should have pulled the trigger. Wembanyama was in the paint. He still didn't shoot it. You know why he didn't shoot it? It wasn't because he was trying to get a highlight on Wemby. Oh, no.
Wemby was in their heads.
He knew that Wemby could get to the shot, even though Wemby was in the freaking restricted zone. Maybe not in the strictest zone, but he was in the paint and Cooper was at the top of the key and he knew that Wemby could still get to that shot.
Yeah.
There's just nothing is safe out there. Yeah. That's why I'm saying, guys, if he stays healthy, that guy's going to be the best player of all time.
Yeah. And he's getting to the line now. You know, it's just one game, but I mean, he was getting a very, you know, I don't want to say it wasn't warranted, but he was getting a very favorable whistle throughout the night too. He got to the line 11 times and hit 9 of those 11 free throws. So,
well, he forces his way in there, man. Like he's able to finally overpower people, no matter who's in front of him. I'd like to think that Anthony Davis is a pretty strong guy. And he made Anthony Davis
look like a child.
Yeah. Look like a child. And that's nothing against Anthony Davis. That's literally just all praise on Wembanyama. That's the most insane thing I've ever seen. The only person that did remotely okay with him physically was PJ. And he still was able to foul PJ out of the game. Pretty much. He was able to foul everyone out of the game. And the reason for that is you can't guard it. You can't do anything with him. When he gets within, I don't know, 10 feet of the basket, it's over. You're done.
Really which leads me to my next point is like you may not can stop Wemby, you know, especially if he's making shots, but at the very least, don't go for the pump fakes.
Yeah.
You know, stay down. Like if he wants to shoot a contested three, which isn't contested for him because he sees directly over everybody and outstretched hands, he sees over that too. But it's like just don't go for the pump fake. You know, just stay down and let him shoot it. And he still might can go past you, step by you and get past you. But, I mean, just don't give him any momentum.
So this is a different Wembanyama that we're dealing with in terms of shot tendency, okay? Younger Wembanyama would settle for shots. This guy's taking it to your chest. He is looking to take you to the rim. That's why it's not good enough to just sit there and let him shoot, because if you sit back, he's going to take it into your chest and get to the rim, because he knows that he's either A, going to get the bucket, B, going to get to the line, or C, all the above.
Yeah.
So what we need to do with him, what everyone needs to do with him, is really all you can do is double him whenever he is on the perimeter. First of all, deny, deny, deny. Don't let him get the ball if you can, especially inside the arc. Second, if he does get the ball, hopefully it's on the arc, you got to send a double, probably from back weak side, rotate down, and just pray to God he doesn't see the opening on the back side.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
Yeah. Because I'm looking at it, he was one of two. He only shot two threes on the night, but I can count. There was at least five times, maybe more, where he was pump faking behind the three-point line and then driving past after a guy bit on that pump fake. So, I mean, he only shot two threes. Why were we, you know, why were guys still going for the pump fake at that point?
They shouldn't, but I'm here to tell you that it really doesn't matter.
And speaking, we're going to get to some Mavs stats and, you know, observations too, but, you know, Stephon Castle for San Antonio was pretty dang solid too. He in 29 minutes, he had 22 points, 7 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, and was a plus 24 while shooting 8 of 12. So Stephon Castle looks, which, I mean, he was good last year, but he looks a lot more, you know, settled down and more in control this year. And Spurs are scary, man. They, you know, I didn't know. I fully expected a close game last night at the very least, whether the Mavs won or lost. I did not expect a 30-plus point beatdown against the Spurs. That was insane. Okay, so let's talk about some Mavs stuff. We know how crazy Wemby is. I mean, it's people were, you know, everywhere you turn around, people were talking about him on social media last night, but it's warranted. I mean, he's that good. But another thing we were looking forward to was Cooper Flagg and his debut. And it was shaky. I mean, he looked like a rookie out there. Now, given he's playing out of position, you know, Jason Kidd, for the first game of Cooper Flagg's career, decided to put him at point guard because Kyrie's out, and I guess he just didn't trust, you know, D'Angelo Russell or whoever else he could have put in that role. So Cooper Flagg started at point guard, didn't score in the first half, didn't get his first bucket until the third quarter, and he ended up finishing with 10 points, 10 rebounds, 1 steal, and shot 4 of 13 from the field. So, you know, it's not great. I mean, but it's not just about the counting stats either, because there were several times where I thought he was sound defensively. You know, I feel like he was in position on offense at times where he could have scored more. They, you know, the other Mavs just weren't finding him. Like, for example, there was one instance where Clay could have swung the ball to Cooper, who was wide open in the corner, and Clay decided to just take a ill-advised three and missed it. And it almost, I feel like Cooper Flagg was like telling Clay about, like, hey, swing it to me. Because it just seemed to me like there was a lot of that in this game.
There's a lot.
And another, sorry, one more thing, and then I'll give it to you. But speaking of stuff like that, Anthony Davis, who finished with 22 points, 13 rebounds, 1 assist, 2 steals, 1 block, and he was 7 of 22 from the floor, which, you know, for a power forward center, that's not good at all. Like, you gotta be more efficient than that. But after the game, Anthony Davis made a comment that, you know, there were too many ISOs in this game. And it's like, well, Anthony Davis, most of everything he did was ISO. So, I mean, it's kind of like, you know, you're saying that, but, you know, you might be part of the problem there. So,
So the problem is, as far as like the isolation ball is concerned, yeah, AD should not be ISOing most people from the perimeter. He's not that type of player. I know everyone says he was a point guard in high school, blah, 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 blah. It didn't work last night. So he's not an isolation player. Second of all, I think a lot of our isolations are due to, number one, this offense not being catered to the personnel that we have. There is no flow. There's absolutely no, what's the word, continuity. It doesn't work. And so what you end up having is a bunch of guys looking to get theirs, and that's because there's not a true point guard on the floor. And don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that Cooper Flagg did a bad job at point guard. But what I will say is putting Cooper Flagg at point guard is hindering his ability to be impactful, or at least fully impactful.
On offense.
On offense, yes.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that lineup that we started out with looked pretty freaking great defensively for the first 5 minutes of the game until PJ picked up his second foul, and then we had to shift things. And then San Antonio went on a 10-0 run, and it was all, you know, shits and giggles from then on out. But I just don't think that the wise move is to put one of your top three offensive weapons and have him as a distributor slash initiator.
Yeah.
Because I think that a lot of what we're doing is taking Cooper Flagg out of the offense. At least that's what I thought last night whenever
watched. Well, I agree with that too. And I thought the same thing. As I took time to kind of digest everything that happened last night, my initial takeaway was, or one of the things I would kind of do if I was Jason Kidd to tinker with this and see if it worked a little bit better. And he's probably not going to do it because, you know, Klay Thompson is such a respected veteran, you know, four-time champion, all that stuff. But I think I would play Cooper at the two. I think I'd play Cooper at the two and either start D'Angelo Russell, who was not, I mean, he had a worse second half than he did first half last night, but I thought the initial minutes for D'Lo last night were okay. Mm-hmm. Start D'Lo at point guard or start Ryan Nimhard at point guard and move Cooper Flagg to the two, and you still have everybody big from that point on. Cooper Flagg at the two, PJ at the three, AD at the four, Lively at the five, and you know, roll with that. And obviously Nimhard, because of his size, is going to be a little bit of a defensive liability. But, I mean, the dude, he led the NCAA in assists last year for Gonzaga. And last night, in his debut as an undrafted point guard in 16 minutes off the bench, had 8 points and 5 assists. By far the most assist of any Mavs player on the team. So
yeah, he passes the eye test offensively, but it's exactly what you say about him defensively. Where does he fit in on that side of the ball? And I don't know. I mean, if you have that big lineup along with him, you can maybe hide him in some defensive circumstances. But I know I'm going to sound like a broken record, but we really need to trade Anthony Davis for a combo guard. There's just no way around it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's going to end up – I don't want to overreact to one game, but when you get beat that bad in the opening game, it makes you start to question some things. And I just wonder if it's going to end up being, you know, when we get – to mid-December, what the record's going to look like. You know, is the team going to have any more chemistry? Are they going to have more flow offensively than we saw last night? Because if the offense – the defense can be good, but it doesn't matter if you're not scoring. And, you know, the defense can only stay good for so long, but if you're not scoring either and you're – you know, the defense just kind of feels like it's at a point where – it's doing all this work and there's no reward for it, you know, you're kind of twiddling your thumbs a little bit. And eventually, if you're going up against a good offensive team, they're going to have a breakthrough at some point. So you got to be able to score the ball. And I don't know. I mean, I think if, you know, say Nimhard, for example, I think you could probably start him and hopefully make up for some of the defensive issues that, like last night, for example, he seems to move his feet pretty well, but he's just a smaller dude, and he just doesn't have quite as much pop as some of these other, like Stephon Castle had him at the top of the key and, you know, did a little jab step, drove past him and dunked it. So, you know, there's some, now given because of the Mavs foul trouble, he didn't get as much help after that blow by, but you know, that's kind of the stuff that you get into if you start him. But again, the offense has to flow better than it did. And I think you're going to have a guy like Nembhard or even D'Angelo Russell, who had three assists last night. You know, you're going to have some, you got to have a table setter. And I just don't think Cooper Flagg is at that point to where he needs to be the table setter, even though we know he's capable and he may improve in that role going forward. But, you know, you said it best last night, DJ, we need to be utilizing Cooper Flagg as a scorer right now. We need to be putting him in actions that gets him open, you know, run plays for him and let him be a scorer because we need his scoring. Like we're going to need more than 10 points from Cooper Flagg and more than in a lot of these games, you know, to win these games, especially with Kyrie Irving out.
No, absolutely. And, you know, Cooper Flagg, as great as Cooper Flagg is, he's not one of those guys that you can just give the ball at the top of the key and say, go get me a bucket. He just isn't. He's not one of those guys right now. And that's okay, but you got to run stuff for him. And we ought to be able to do that. You know, I saw some actions last night that I thought were very interesting where we would get some switches off ball screens, and we were able to get some really good looks off of that. And then as the game went on, it just seemed like we drifted away from it. We panicked. We started going ISO. Anthony Davis took and missed about four or five shots in a row. And then the whole offense just falls to pieces. And, you know, if that's what you're going to do, if you're going to do a slow down, you know, ball screen, target the switch type of offense, great. But you actually have to commit to it. You can't just go ISO whenever things fall apart.
Yeah.
You got to have some discipline in that regard. And we just didn't have that last night. We panicked. I thought we panicked. And Anthony Davis, you know, took it upon himself to be the guy, which is fine. I mean, that's what we're paying you the big bucks for. It's just that he didn't convert.
Yeah.
So
I'm looking at the, you know, it's bad when your overall field goal percentage is more than 5 percentage points less than your 3-point percent. The 3-point shooting, they only shot 21 times, but they were pretty decent on their 3-point shooting. 42.9% hit 9 of their 21 attempts, but they were 37.3% overall for the game, which means on twos they were shooting like 30%.
A lot of that has to do with Wembanyama too.
Yes, it does.
So
yeah.
You gotta give that guy his flowers for that. And there's
another thing that, you know, put the Mavs in a sit, because like I said, it was a close game early on. The Mavs and Spurs were going back and forth even with Wemby playing the way he was. But the thing that turned, in my opinion, and it may, you know, we'll have to see if it makes a difference the next time the Mavs and Spurs get together, but you know, Daniel Gafford being out still with, you know, because he sprained his ankle in training camp. Daniel Gafford being out was big because Derek Lively got in early foul trouble. Anthony Davis and PJ Washington were in foul trouble at times. And that made it to where Dwight Powell had to enter the game. And look, I love Dwight. He's the GOAT. We get it.
He's our Lord and Savior.
But he shouldn't be on the same court as Victor Wembanyama. And yeah. In I felt like when he was out there, that was kind of a turning point for the game. Now, it doesn't reflect it in the plus minus because he was only a negative 5 in 8 minutes. But that's just the feeling I got because it was toward the end of that second quarter when the game was still close. Dwight Powell was in the game and he just couldn't do anything to stop what was coming. Nobody could, but especially Dwight Powell, because he doesn't have the length. And, you know, then it was a 9-point deficit at halftime and it just snowballed from there. But if Daniel Gafford had been playing last night, you have another big athletic body who can go up and, you know, potentially block shots and muscle his way down low on the offensive end and, you know, dunk the ball and all that kind of stuff. And you have six more fouls to play with in another big. So I feel like if Gafford was available last night, that would have helped a lot, because when the Mavs, when Lively and AD and PJ Washington all got into that four foul territory, Lively had four in the first half. Mm-hmm. You know, it was getting pretty dark at that point. So, you know, I'd be interested to see how last night goes if Gafford was there. Mavs still might lose, but I don't think it would have snowballed the way it did in the second half and turned into a 30-plus point blowout if he was there, because it was hard to, you know, manage that if your kid, all your bigs getting into foul trouble like that, and then you don't have the offense to sustain it. So it was rough.
It would be interesting to watch Wimby go head to head against Gafford. Not to say that Gafford, you know, is anywhere near where Wimby is, but I think Gafford might match up a little bit better than AD or Lively, simply because he's a little bit heavier, a little bit stronger. He may be able to take that initial hit and force Wimby to, you know, use some other forms of getting to the rim besides just running through your chest, because that's all he was doing to our post players. Let's be honest. He was just running through their chest, taking them straight to the rim. I mean, there was a point in last night where he literally took AD from the wing, backed him down all the way to the block and dunked on him. I've never seen anything like that before in my life. That was like Shaq-esque, but worse, because there's nothing he can do. But anyway, I think that Gafford might do a little bit better job. I wonder if he can slide his feet quick enough to stay in front of him. But I do think he's strong enough to take that initial hit and keep him in front of him.
Yeah. Well, it was a disappointing night. It didn't go the way we wanted it to. But, you know, I'm trying my best not to overreact. I definitely overreacted last night. So, yeah, I mean, if y'all follow me on X, I'm sorry. That's just, you react to stuff in the moment, in the heat of the moment. And that's, you know, it could end up being silly later on. But in all reality, it's one game out of 82. You know, the good thing about the NBA is this stuff turns quickly, so we don't have to dwell on this loss for much longer, because tomorrow night, Friday night, the Mavs take on the Wizards. It's another home game. The next, let's see here. Am I looking at this right? Are this many home games? Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. The next five games for the Mavs are all at home. So their first road game doesn't come until November 3rd against Houston. So they have a good opportunity to kind of bounce back, because, you know, Washington, let's be honest, even with Kyrie out, I don't know if Daniel Gafford will play, but if Daniel Gafford does play, that could be like a revenge type game for him. It should be a win against Washington, but, you know, you never know with how, if this offense sputters again. Toronto, that should be a win in my opinion. Then you play OKC, a team that you've had their number over the last couple years, even without Luka. And then you play Indiana, which is going to be – oh, gosh, that's going to be tough, because they're – well, Halliburton's out, isn't he? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's still out.
Halliburton's out, so, you know, you could win that. And then Detroit, that's going to be tough. So, yeah, I mean, look, it's – we can look at this in past years and be like, oh, yeah, the Mavs should win this. They might lose this. I think we're in uncharted territory here. We don't really know what to expect. We knew that some of these games were going to be rock fights. I just didn't think we were going to start out with a 30-plus point blowout loss. So we'll see. Maybe the Mavs will take care of business and Cooper Flagg will have more of a dynamic scoring night against the Wizards, and maybe it'll help morale when it comes to not just us, but Mavs fans in general, because Mavs Twitter is not off to a good start. We're going to have to get some blood pressure medicine for some of these people at some point.
I had to stop looking at it. It's pretty dismal. All I can say is this. There are three main keys that need to be addressed before we can win a game. Number one, got to figure out the offense. What we saw last night was abysmal. It has no place on an NBA floor. Number two, we got to figure out how to get Cooper Flagg more involved in the offense, said offense that needs to be redeveloped. And number three, our best defenders need to be able to stay on the floor and stay out of foul trouble.
Yeah.
And those are my big keys.
And one more thing, I'm gonna just leave everybody with this, but you know, some big news broke in the NBA today with some gambling stuff. Portland Trailblazers head coach Chauncey Billups, you know, former Pistons great, was arrested by the FBI.
Yep.
For some gambling stuff. I don't know what the details are with that, but he was arrested. Terry Rozier, Miami Heat guard, was arrested. Mm-hmm. What's the LeBron's friend?
Oh, Damon Jones, right?
Damon Jones. Yeah. He, I don't know if he was arrested, but he's under investigation, I think. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of stuff. Look, the NBA has opened up a can of worms with their involvement, you know, with all these betting sponsorships and stuff like that. I think there's going to be a lot more that comes out with this. It's not going to just be those guys. And then Malik Beasley, it ruined his free agency because of all that. I don't think they ever found anything on him, but just because he was involved in the investigation, he missed out on a big payday. He was going to get, like, I think $70 or $80 million from the Detroit Pistons this offseason. And then, you know, because of the investigation, nobody wanted to touch him. So, you know, it's, but anyway, the reason I mention all that gambling stuff is I saw somebody on Mavs Twitter said, and I quote, it says, "I honestly don't care if I get fired. I was part of the Terry Rozier and Chauncey Billups gambling scandal. My name is Nico Harrison, and I work for the Dallas Mavericks."
Oh, man. It'll make a great 30 for 30 one day. They'll call it playing on house money. That'll be the title, playing with house money.
But yeah, look, I mean, everybody just needs to breathe a little bit, I think. We're going to reset. We're going to take in a few more games, and we'll see how we feel about things, you know, coming back next week. I don't know. You know, it's going to be a pretty busy weekend for me with Southern Miss homecoming coming up, but we'll see. If I've got some time, I may just do like a quick solo recap pod of that Wizards game late Friday night or early Saturday morning. But if that doesn't happen, you know, DJ and I will see y'all next week, early next week, to recap some other things that we have observed. So, guys, we appreciate y'all coming in and listening to us. As always, we greatly appreciate it. It's nice to be back for another season. The off season was one of the longest I've ever personally experienced. It was so long. I don't know if it was just like a hangover from, you know, the Luka trade and being so disinterested in things from that point until the lottery happened. And at that point, you're already in the off season. So I feel like that's probably why it felt so long, but it's great to be back. We're going to continue to bring you guys as much Mavs content as we can. And be sure to go like, rate, and subscribe on all your favorite podcast platforms. Hit that subscribe button on our YouTube channel. We're on Substack. It's free if you sign up with your email. If you want to do a paid subscription for future exclusive content or bonus content, you can do so as well. It's $5 a month. And check out our merch store as well, mavsstepbackmerch.dashery.com. We have a lot of really cool Mavs designs up there, and we'll be dropping new ones throughout the season. So be sure to pin that on your browser thing and go check it out every now and then, because we've got some cool stuff up there. But guys, we appreciate it. Y'all have a great rest of your day, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.